left off last time in Exodus 15, and we had just crossed the Red Sea. We had just seen the great miraculous power of God, and quickly things are going to change as far as the hearts and the minds and the tone of the people. Let's pick it up in verse 22. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness, and they found no water. Now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah. And the people complained against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" Now, the people, if you've been around for this study, you know that the people had just experienced a very miraculous event. They had seen great blessing. They had seen great victory. I mean, if you had been there for the parting of the Red Sea and you had been a part of that, that would be something I think that you would always remember. It would be something that would be in your heart for the rest of your lives. And I think when we go through those kind of events in our own lives, when we all witness the miraculous, when we all experience the blessings of God, and perhaps you can think now, even as you reach back in your mind's eye, the great things that God has done. And when those events transpired, you said, "You know what? I'm never going to forget this. This is going to be with me forever." But you know something? The mind tends to fade, and we can get caught up in the day-to-day activities of our lives. And with the lack of worship coming out of our hearts, we can quickly forget about those events. We can forget about the miraculous aspect of that. And it didn't take very long for the people here to do that. I mean, they, in that day, gang, were really no different than us, and were really no different than them. The fact is that we are all going to have times in our lives of great blessings, and we're going to have great trials. And if you've walked with God for very long, you'll discover that oftentimes those great trials seem to come right after the great highs. Now, one of the greatest stories in that vein is the Mount Transfiguration. And the apostles, they were up there, and it's like, wow, they were all mind-blowed, and what was going on there, and the events that transpired up there is incredible. As Jesus was transfigured before them, I mean, he was just glowing, and it was just awesome. And then, you know, there was Moses, and whoa, it just was freaking them out. Then they come down, and they're riding high, and what do they find at the bottom of the mountain? But a demon-possessed boy whom the other apostles couldn't cast those demons out. And it was a real test of their faith, and it was a real trial for them, because they thought that they had things under control, only to be jerked up short. And that's the way it is for many of us. Now, we may not like that, but that's the reality of the Christian walk. We're all going to have the highs. We're all going to have the lows. Why does this happen? Well, no doubt the stretching of our faith causes us to grow, to have some spiritual growth in our lives, to develop trust in the Lord. If you never are in those situations, you never allow yourself to be put in them positions. You never place yourself in those positions. You don't learn to trust God in that aspect, and therefore you can tend to remain a spiritual infant, a spiritual child. Now, the fact is, many folks, and probably throughout the world, but certainly here in America, we tend to try to avoid those lows at any cost. I mean, we'll do just about anything to get out of that kind of situation. But what I've noticed in our attempts to try to level off our lives so that we don't have the lows, what happens too is then we don't have the highs. It seems only for those who are willing to get out there and take those great risks, get knocked around, have the difficult times in their lives, they're the ones who really have the highs with Jesus. They're the ones who really get to see the miraculous. They're the ones who know the ways of God as well as the acts of God. So today you may be one of those. Your life may be very calm, and your life may be very consistent for the most part. But you know what? If that's the case, your life is also no doubt quite boring. Because without growth, without that pushing the envelope, so to speak, without the change and the maturity that is designed in the Christian faith to come to us, we tend to just level off into this droning, robotic lifestyle. And that's not what God intended us to have at all. It's amazing, I think, how we, like the Israelites here, can turn from praise to complaint so quickly. I don't have to look out there to see that. I only have to look in a mirror. I can be quick to do that. But I think that that's a human tendency, and I'm not excusing it at all. But we can be praising God one minute and complaining about something the next. And we need to realize that, gang, we have been saved not to move into a life of luxury, not to move into a life of comfort, not even to move into a life of that kind of consistent, static kind of lifestyle. We've been called to live the radical Christian life, which puts us out there, and it's dangerous. It really is. But our lives will indeed be full of spiritual lessons if you allow yourself to be in that situation. And gang, just like chronological life, if we don't place ourselves in that situation and we don't allow ourselves to grow, what happens is we become spiritually stunted, just like we can become chronologically or emotionally stunted. We've talked before about the spiritual Peter Pans. Those who claim to have been saved 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, but they're still that same spiritual infant. They never grow up. They're forever a spiritual child. They don't challenge themselves. They don't push themselves to learn or to grow or to allow themselves to be placed in a realm where Jesus is all they have. Now the fact is, these people in the wilderness, that's it. That's all they had. It wasn't like, you know, you could, you know, bop on down the street and there was an Aldi's down there and you could stock up, okay? There was nothing. They were absolutely, totally dependent upon God's care. Now, if you've never been in that situation, or you've never allowed yourself, or again, never put yourself in that situation, you're missing so much. It's scary and exciting at the same time. It's one of the great values of going on a missions trip around here. Is so oftentimes we find ourselves in situations where we're like, well, you know, God has got to intervene. I mean, there's some times that's just insanely, you're just hanging by the, you know, the balance, the precipice, and you don't know what's going to happen, and all you can do is pray. I don't know if anybody's here. Who spent the night on the floor of the airport in that crazy town in India? Tom Jones. And he's still here. He stayed. That was a crazy time. We didn't know we were in the middle of the night. You know, armed guards open up the airport for us. We sleep on the floor. It's a whole story. Anyway, India is full of things like that. Or when you have two flat tires at once, because whenever you travel in India, you got to have like five flat tires in a journey, especially if you're with Josh and Sarah. Bad karma. Okay. But then when you have two flat tires, then you're really stranded and you're in the middle of nowhere in India and all kinds of crazy stuff happens. So, but it is a time where God is given the opportunity to do the miraculous. I will warn you, it kind of becomes addicting. Once you've tasted them highs of Jesus, you find yourself seeking after that again and again. So I can't guarantee you where that will end up. You may end up in the mission field or in a pulpit somewhere. But that's God's plan of growing up. Now, if you're guarding your kid and you never encourage him to stand and walk, but just continue to crawl, I mean, you want to see him when he's 15 and he's crawling around, you know, in Pampers? You clean them up. I know. So even though people were right where God wanted them to be, and they were, let's acknowledge that. God had done a great work. They had taken them where they were. So God had them right where they were supposed to be. They had no reason to complain to God for where they were because of all the miraculous that he had done. Took them out of bondage, Red Sea, escaped from, you know, the Egyptians, all that. Yet still, they objected to the conditions. They objected to the cost. They objected to the conditions. They objected to the cost. Now, they didn't have any room to complain. We know that, gang, don't we? But they still did complain. And we have a tendency to do that, and oftentimes we're really complaining, and the Scripture says so. We're oftentimes complaining against God, but we look for a convenient human target. Now, I found a long time ago that the most convenient human target in that realm is usually the pastor. It just goes with the territory. So I just, you know, pretty much take it with a grain of salt now. But it can be aimed at other things. Maybe you're aiming it at your spouse. You're saying, well, I'm not where I should be because it's his fault or her fault. I have news for you. Try telling the Lord that when you're standing in front of him. Gee, you know, I really wanted to do things, God, but, you know, it was her. She wouldn't let me. Just imagine yourself for a moment telling Jesus Christ that. That, you know, it sounds ludicrous, don't it? Because the only thing that matters is you and the Lord. You can't blame me. You can't blame her. You can't blame him. You can't blame the kids. You can't blame the folks. It's you and Jesus. Never forget that. So they were right where they were supposed to be. So they grumbled and they complained. And they complained and grumbled because things weren't like they thought it would be. Now, don't raise your hand, okay? But I want you to just think for a minute. How many of you started down this whole Christian road and you imagined it to be something, and only later on, in the privacy and the quiet of your own heart and mind, you went, this isn't really what I thought it'd be. This is hard. This is tough. I mean, where's my stuff? I mean, isn't Jesus supposed to give me stuff? The wallet that never runs out of money, you know? And maybe you didn't mention that. I will encourage you that if you are thinking like that, you're not alone. I think all of us at one time or another went through that kind of thing where we all were like, gee, I don't know, this is hard. I think it's a turning point for all of us. You know that if you attend here, you know I've never painted any pretty pictures. I've never tried to make it sound like, you know, Jesus is a genie in a bottle, or you just get three wishes and all your dreams will come true. Being a Christian's the hard road. You went the easy road, just coast, man. Everyone else is going that direction. Just ride along, you know, and just finish along with everybody else. But I think we can get to that point that no matter what God's done, whatever he's done to heal us, whatever we've had, if we get to a point and go, this isn't really what I expected, it can be a real crossroads in your life. Because if you're using Jesus or God the Father as some magic elixir to try to smooth over the bumps in your life, that's not who he is. He's your creator. He's your Father. Being born again is coming back to him. Okay? Sometimes I think we come to the Lord thinking we're doing him a favor. It just means one more troubled person, I think. So when the people now, they arrived at Marah here, it says the water was bitter. And I don't know what that really means. You can ask when you get there. I don't know if it was so bitter that they couldn't drink it at all, or whether it was like Menominee water. You drink it, though you don't really want to. It was that kind of bitter. I don't know really what they're talking about. But either way, the bottom line here is they were grumbling because of the water. They complained again because things weren't the way things envisioned, as they envisioned it. Now, I want you to notice something, too. Let's remember that this is not Moses' first trek into the wilderness. Let's remember that when before Moses even showed up there, back in Egypt, he had a good long stretch, decades, out there in the wilderness. Because God was preparing him to minister to prepare others. Perhaps you've heard pastors say, including this one, well, where'd you go to seminary? You know, school of the wilderness. Because that's where our training comes in. That God does that. He trains leaders before they are to go and train others. So Moses had a good long period of time of training before he was expected to go out there and lead these hundreds of thousands of other people. So this was familiar territory for him. He was not, you know, out there on unfamiliar ground. The people, they had been redeemed from bondage at this point. But they weren't done. Again, gang, they had been redeemed, but they weren't done. We need to get over the idea in this country that once we say the sinner's prayer, that we can be poked with a fork and we're finished. It's just not the case. You're done when you quit breathing. And until then, the journey continues. The maturity that is supposed to be happening in our life is supposed to be continuing. There's work to be done. There's a calling upon your life. There's a mission to complete. And each and every one of us need to be seeking that out through the anointing of His Spirit. We get the idea that once we're saved, okay, we just sit back and wait for our stuff and then that's it. We're not done, and they weren't done. They had been redeemed indeed, but now they had to learn to walk in God's path. They had to learn to mature. And this is a journey that every one of us in this room is going to go down. We're all going to make that walk, or we're going to go back to Egypt. There is no alternative, gang. It's these tests that we go through in our lives, and no one likes them. It's these tests that teach us to rely on God instead of relying on ourselves, instead of being self-reliant, instead of being selfish. And aren't we in our natural state? We're terribly selfish. That's one of the you know, sure signs that a person's not born again. It's like the whole world is like this, you know, 6 inches around them. Every decision is based on me. And so if it works for me, it works for you. It's the world's plan of living. Now, our modern church, I'm afraid today, we have clung to the idea of salvation. But it seems that this, despite the parting of the Red Sea, we like that, we have wholly abandoned growth. We've left this idea of maturity behind. It's something that's very near and dear to me because, as I have shared many times in my own testimony, gang, that I was saved early on, but I never grew up. I never matured. And I'd like to blame the church I went to, and to some degree, they carry their share. But I didn't know. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know how to go about doing it. My true maturity and growth in God didn't happen until I walked into this church just like all of you did. Now, albeit there was a whole lot less people in those days. And I never knew that I'd be here. I was just happy to be there. But that maturity must happen, and it should be a very critical part of every single Christian's life. Let's go on in the text. Let's go on, let's see, we're in verse 25, I think. So he cried out to the Lord, Moses did, and the Lord showed him a tree. When he cast it into the waters were made sweet. Then he made a statute and an ordinance for them. And he said, he tested them and said, if you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in his sight, give ear to his commandments and keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I brought to the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. And then they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees, so they camped there by the waters. So now Moses here, he did what he knew he was supposed to do. He went to God. And again, gang, he probably went to God because God was all he had. You know, and I'm not dissing human counselors. I'm not dissing accountability partners and your friends and people who you can go to for prayer and all of that. But let me tell you something. We all need to learn to go to God first. How often we go and we want to hear human input, when what we really need to be doing is going back to God and talking to Him and seeking Him. Moses knew that. He knew where the answers lied, and he went He went to God. Maybe that's a good place for us all to be, at least sometime in our life, again, where there's nothing else you can do and nowhere else to go. Have you ever been in that situation? When we have a choice, have you ever noticed that God seems to be the last place that we go? We always attempt to try to work things out on our own, and we try to work it out, you know, so it fits our comfort, so it brings us glory, and everything works out for our whole life. We try everything else we can, and then and it's all down, nowhere else to go, I guess I better pray. I guess I better go to God. God answered prayer. Even though the people no doubt didn't deserve it, how oftentimes did God answer prayer for you when you know in your heart you didn't deserve it? I mean, these guys have just been complaining and moaning and groaning, and he still came through. But let me tell you something, gang. You never deserve it. We never deserve it. It's called grace. That's the true meaning of grace. Now what happens here, though, God comes to the rescue, he answers prayer, he provides for the need. Ah, but have you ever noticed, just like in this situation, God always moves to use that moment as a teaching moment, doesn't he? So he offers up here, as he often does, a if you will, I will scenario. Now there are some promises in the Bible that God promises and says, I don't care whether you do it or not, I'm going to. I like those promises because it have nothing to do with me. But there are also other promises in the Bible that says, if you will, I will. And it also goes to say, if you don't, I won't. So he offers up a if you will, I will scenario here. Now, that doesn't always go over too well. We don't, again, like those kind of promises very well, because the truth is we're a people who like something for nothing. And we're all looking for bargains, right? I mean, we kind of deal in our religious faith sort of like we're dealing on eBay. You know, I don't want to pay any more than I have to. Then bid, oh, no, it's going to go in the last second. It's going to cost me a lot. But we don't want to just buy it outright. We just want to kind of bid on it because I don't want to have to pay more than I have to. And how many of us deal our Christian life like that? Well, you know, I want to go to heaven. I don't want to burn in hell or anything. But hey, you know, I don't want to give any more than I have to either. You know, I kind of like some things in this world. So, oh, I'll give you this, but I'll keep this. And okay, you're going to have that. But I'm going to keep this. And I'll tell you what, Lord, you can have Sundays and Wednesdays and I'll take Friday and Saturday nights. That sound good? And so we try to cut a deal with God. But you know what? God here lays down his own mandate here. Because he is saying, look, if you be obedient, I'll bless you. This is a fundamental concept of Christianity from the beginning. If you are obedient, I'll bless you. Let me tell you something. You have only my word outside of the Bible to believe. But I'm telling you as a living, breathing human being, that is an absolutely true promise of God. I've played it both ways, gang. I know what happens when I don't obey. And I know what happens when I do. I like the blessings of when I obey. And so he's throwing down right here in the middle saying, look, if you guys will do what I say, I'm going to bless your socks off. I'm going to wow you. If you think the parting of the Red Sea was something, you ain't seen nothing yet. Fact is, again, we want it consistently. We want the blessings. We want the benefits of being a child of God. And we don't want to give anything. It's the human condition, and it most definitely is the American condition. Frankly, though, and I need to emphasize this, doing these things is not mandatory. If you don't do nothing, if you sit there and warm that pew for the rest of your life, he's still going to love you. Isn't that crazy? He's still going to love you. Because doing things isn't going to make him love you. He's not going to make change his thoughts and his heart towards you. But I will tell you one thing. Doing nothing for him, it only proves that you don't love him. And frankly, you don't even know him. Because don't tell me that Jesus does not elicit a response. And that's what you're saying. Jesus Christ, Son of God, died on the cross, resurrected the third day, doesn't elicit any response. You know, it's like PBS. No, I mean, this is some exciting stuff. That's how you know somebody's on with Jesus, is because you see the response in their life. Not just their words, but they got it going on. To say otherwise is to take away the power of salvation and the power of my God. So God tells them essentially what he tells us today. Again, if you're obedient to my words, you know, you do what I'm telling you, not just hearing it. I want you to notice that the verse is doing it. Okay? So we hear it, we do it, then that will exist, will live in that place of blessing. It's a simple concept. Hard to accept, though. God took them now to the next place where there was bountiful blessing. Where'd they go next? Well, they went to this place where there was 12 wells and 70 shade trees. You ever get to the other side of one of those crazy situations? Like, whew, I thought I was a dead man. I was finished. And I made it. How long do you remember? We so quickly go back. Listen, when the Bible talks about like a dog returning to its vomit. Now, A, if you've had a dog, you probably witnessed that. So when you do that, you'll go, just like a dirty sinner, you know. But when you see that, you understand that it's a disgusting concept, but it happens, doesn't it? Because we forget. I've watched people come out of bondage situations of Egypt in a person's life, and a decade later go right back to it and fall and be consumed by it again. I always want to go, 10 years, dude, 10 years. How much time do you think you got? Now, maybe you have to be my age to be cognizant of that. But it's amazing how many people will go back to it because they forget. Now, the people, they have left Egypt. And as we open up 16 here, they no doubt thought that it would only be a few days. And by the way, if you get out your little map in the back of your Bible and you kind of trace how far that it should have only taken them a few days. But let me tell you something. When it comes to spiritual maturity, God's got all the time in the world. Now, he can do it in a year. Or he can take a decade or a lifetime, whichever you prefer. So God was going to get these lessons across no matter how long it took. And he's still doing that, gang. So things weren't going to move as fast as the people preferred. And maybe that's your gig tonight. Maybe that's the thing where you're saying, this really isn't working out the way I thought it would, you know? Because things aren't moving as fast. Let me ask you something. Are you learning the lessons as you're being taught? Or are you one of those guys that keep having to go over it and over it and over it, and you can hear the Lord say, okay, let's go over it one more time. Because you're just not learning it. You're tested and you fall, and tested and you fall. And if God is not moving you along on the path and the journey as fast as you want to go, you have to stop and ask, am I learning the lessons he's trying to teach me? Or am I still spiritually in the third grade? It was going to take some time to teach these people these lessons. And it was going to be mandatory that they learn them before they moved in that place of the promised land. Because now, what did I tell you guys? What's on the other side of that river Jordan? What's in that place of blessing? It's awesome, isn't it? The Bible describes it as a land of milk and honey and grape clusters that it would take two people to carry. It'd be like, this is awesome. Oh, it's awesome over there. Oh, but wait a minute. There's giants over there too. Because that's the Christian condition. That's the blessed place of walking in Christ. A lot of people imagine or want to imagine the promised land as a picture of heaven. Really? I don't expect there to be enemies I got to fight in heaven. No, the promised land isn't a picture of heaven. The promised land is a picture of that place where we are called to go as Christians, filled with the Holy Spirit, great blessing, and fighting the fight. That's where we are called to. But as we go through this, many of us are going to have to admit when we get to the end of this story that you are like so many there. You're still just wandering around circles in the wilderness. I mean, you got to the River Jordan. God said, come on, man, let's go over. Come on, let's fight. Well, no, there's giants over there. I'd rather have consistent and boring and monotone, no highs, no lows, wander in the wilderness of the desert, eating manna morning, noon, and night. I want milk and honey. I want giant grapes. I'm crossing. And the fact we don't only says, I don't trust the Lord. I don't trust Him. So many of us today, we want to blame our jobs. We want to blame our house, our kids, our careers, our school, all these different reasons why I can't. And really what it comes down to is you're fearful and you don't trust the Lord. Did God love them in the wilderness? Yes, He did. Did God take care of them in the wilderness? Yes, He did. But I hope you guys are not satisfied with a manna life. Because I'm not. And God will wow you. But I promise you there will be some giants to slay along the way. So God had spent a great deal of time, as I said, training Moses. He was now ready. He was moving up. He was training these people to journey through the land. Now please, I emphasize that word. We were never called to wander in the wilderness. We are to journey through the wilderness. And we'll all be there. We all have times of wilderness, but it's to go through the wilderness, not wander around out there in the wilderness. I mean, you know, I've noticed some folks are never really looking for a destination. You know, they're just wandering around. Because you know what? It's easy to wander, isn't it? That's not hard. I'm just wandering around. Where are you going? Well, I haven't quite figured that out yet. I'm seeking. And they never find it. Let's go on, read just a little bit of 16 today, okay? And they journeyed from Elim, and the congregation of the children of Israel came into the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt. Then the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. Again, that's my words there. And the children of Israel said to them, Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full. But you brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Yeah, somebody needed to be killed for sure, but the people now, again, immediately start to complain, and again, complain against Moses. They had begun to remember albeit I'm sure revisionist history, they want to remember what things were like back in Egypt. See, they failed to continue with hearts of worship and continue with hearts of praise. They forgot the time of blessing, and so they quickly slipped into the complaining mode as soon as things got to be uncomfortable. And again, that's just what we tended to do. So now, what they started to do, and it's one of Satan's greatest tools, they began to remember their BC days, and they began to do so with rose-colored glasses. Now, I think we're probably all guilty of this. I mean, I will readily admit here before all of you, on an occasion, I can be caught laughing and being stupid about my dope-smoking days. Okay? You know, like it was all so wonderful. And I think we all can do that. We can talk about, oh man, we were so drunk. Oh, isn't that crazy? We had a great time. And no one ever, you know, talks about, yeah, and then the next morning I'm hanging over the, you know, porcelain throne till noon, you know, puking my guts out. Nobody remembers that. Or I almost got an accident, or I did get an accident, or you know, I ended up in bed with somebody. I didn't even know who they were. And, you know, all those things. We tend to block those things out, and we tend to just remember all those BC days very fondly, don't we? It's a human tendency. It shouldn't be either. If for no other reason than those days didn't please God, they didn't bring glory to God, He parted the Red Sea for you. We shouldn't be thinking back on how great Egypt was. And that's what they're doing here. I mean, apparently these guys, they forgot about the slavery that was going on back there. You know, they forgot about the lack of freedom, the scarcity of anything other than that which was given then to them to maintain the fact that they were slaves, the bondage, all that. I mean, we forget about all that, don't we? So did they. We forget about the pain, and the loneliness, the lack of purpose, the lack of peace of walking in this world. Sometimes we revisit those days, and some of us don't come back. Those of you that have been in this fellowship long enough, you know. Well, I just thought I'd check it out, you know. Gone. The people not only forgot what God had done, they also forgot what Moses had done. They turned on Moses and they turned on God. Now, did we read 4 and 5? Two more verses. And the Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day that I may test them. What? Test them! That I may test them whether they walk in my law or not. Now this gives us an interesting little view into the supernatural psyche of our Creator. Okay, I'm going to give you some directions, and I'm going to see if you'll do what I told you to do. Verse 5, and it shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. So God pours out even more grace again. They diss God, God comes through, yay, 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 God. They diss God, God comes through, yay, 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 God. And they're round and around and around circles. But let me tell you something. If you're one of those that are doing that, I want to tell you today, there's going to come a day where it's going to get very quiet. Because sooner or later, God's just going to go. Take His hands off. He's going to let you fall. He's going to let you fall because He loves you. He's going to let you fall because unless you do fall, you're never going to learn to walk. So we should never abuse His grace. But God comes through here again. But even in this, He's going to rain down bread from heaven. He's going to supply their needs. But even in this, there's going to be a test. Now, we'll get into this in the weeks to come. But they were only to gather a certain amount, what they needed and no more. Do you find that significant? Okay, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to provide all this stuff, and you go out and you get what you need, but don't get any more than you need. Now, you know what's going to happen, right? Even if you hadn't read the rest of the story. Some people are going to like, I just get a little extra. You know, I get a little tater tots, put it in my pockets here. I'll save it for later. And so what happened? You got these people, and they're going to kind of, you know, stash some. And you know what happened? It got all moldy, and they got them, and they went, oh, it's all gross, and it's green, and it's, you know. So all that they tried to stash, it went out the window, didn't it? You know why? Listen, this is the truth of the night. Because God was going to take care of their need, not their want. Christian, He'll take care of your need. If you're obedient, He'll take care of your need. I can't guarantee He'll take care of you one. And you know what? I'll let you in on a little secret between you and I, okay? He gives you an awful lot of stuff you want to. I don't need a Harley. I want a Harley. He gave me a Harley. I don't need a Harley. Because, you know, He loves giving good gifts to His kids. Now, I'm not saying go follow Jesus and He'll give you a Harley. If He does, that would be cool because we can ride together. But that's a whole different issue, okay? Now, I'm telling you that He does give you good gifts, but He gives you what you need. It's our lust that wants more. And they witnessed this. God was taking care of their need. And listen, this plays out, don't it? I mean, how many of us sock away all we can financially, materially? Because we believe it's going to alleviate the uncertainty. So we build a nice house there on the coast of Japan and think we'll settle here and live forever. The houses are gone. And when you die, you're leaving it all for your kids to squander. It's a way to live without faith, isn't it? I'm not telling you tonight to not have a bank account. I'm not telling you, you know, not to keep a few bucks in your pocket. I'm not telling you not to have a house. Would it be reasonable here? What I'm saying to you is this is not our home. We're leaving here. We've just totally lost the concept of heaven in this earth, haven't we? We're sojourners. We're passing through. I leave you with God's warning about this. Matthew 6:19 says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." It's an eternal truth, eh? Amen. Let's stand.